Thanks for joining me. It's Tuesday, March 29th. You're listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU, Peoria Radio. Today we'll talk labor, environment, Libya, net neutrality, and I'll introduce you to a guest of mine, a local co-op business project leader, Gary Chatham, and we'll explore a new local project for Peoria. Stay tuned. More news is next.
But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be alright? Alright. Alright. You say you got a real solution. You ask me for a contribution. Well, you know, we all do what we can. But if you want money for people with minds that hate, all I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait.
Okay. Well, as you may know, we are now engaged in 3 military actions in 3 different Muslim countries. And as you may know, the UN authorized a no-fly zone over Libya. It's hard to understand what is really going on over there. Catastrophe, violence, death, revolution, any number of things. A lot of Americans don't agree with our involvement in North Africa. Troops on the ground can find it difficult to understand what exactly is going on. Modern military operates on a need-to-know basis, and many men and women of ours on the ground do not need to know. Given that, bullets have no discrepancy. They kill or injure anyone they meet. The first death and injuries have occurred only 4 days in. These are the first confirmed casualties of the Allied operations in Libya.
They are the first confirmed civilian casualties of Allied operations in Libya. Any injury to innocent men or women would be a tragedy. This one doubly so because the wounded were not only the opponents of Colonel Gaddafi, but had just rescued crashed coalition pilots. So almost 4 days into the campaign, is it clear yet who is friend and who is foe, and just exactly what the aims of the mission are? Our international editor, Lindsay Hilsum, is in the east of the country and sends this exclusive report.
A US warplane smouldering in a Libyan field. Local people say it simply fell out of the sky late last night. It appears to have crashed before launching the rockets it was carrying.
A Two planes came together. I saw everything with my own eyes. The plane fell by itself and caught fire, but there was no shooting. I own this farm. At 11:30 last night, I went outside because I heard the sound of planes. I saw it fall down, and after it hit the ground, it exploded.
This morning, the wreckage attracted a bevy of excited onlookers. Last night, people had rushed to the scene, not knowing if it was friend or enemy. But when they realized this was a coalition plane, their first thought was to save the crew.
What people have been telling me is that there were two pilots. One was rescued by helicopter, the other was captured by local people. But they knew he was American and they were friendly to him, so they took him to Benghazi. About six people were injured, but people here don't seem to be resentful. They say that they know this was a coalition aircraft trying to help them.
The villagers told me that while they were handing over the first pilot to the rebel authorities, the Americans came in all guns blazing with a rescue aircraft, injuring bystanders as they scooped up pilot number two.
We're disturbed about the shooting because if they'd given us a chance, we would have handed over both pilots. This shooting created panic.
Did he break his leg here or not to break his leg?
In a Benghazi hospital, we found one of the victims. Staff said his son was even more badly injured and had to have his leg amputated. He told me they'd given the first pilot a big welcome and just wanted to help the second pilot too.
We would have picked him up and put him wherever he wanted in a safe place, even the first pilot. We had a celebration for him.
People told me the plane may have been heading for a radar site 20 miles south, not realizing it was already in rebel hands. The Pentagon says the rescue crew did nothing wrong, but there'll be an investigation into how the U.S. Air Force managed to injure some of the very civilians it's trying to save.
With all this raging on, with all the ugliness of battle, of war, American troops no longer have to uphold the no-fly zone. As of Thursday, last week, March 24th, the Obama administration transferred the lead role in enforcing the no-fly zone over Libya to NATO. But the deal exposed sharp divisions in the alliance and means U.S. warplanes will continue flying combat missions against Libyan ground forces, regardless of NATO being in control of the no-fly zone. NATO ambassadors could not agree on whether to put the alliance in charge of airstrikes against Gaddafi's tanks and other ground forces to prevent them from seizing cities now held by rebel forces. Airplanes from the U.S. and coalition allies, including France and Britain, will continue those attacks. Despite all of the things that Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said when she said that we agree to allow NATO, the United States, to be in a transition of control and command of the no-fly zone. With all that being said, all these agreements, much of the burden of the no-fly zone will still be on the U.S., France, and Britain. They are truly the mightiest member states of the 28-member treaty organization. NATO is headquartered in Brussels, Belgium. It's a European country and a member state of the European Union. The United States is a member of NATO. It seems to me we are the best, militarily speaking, member state. I'd be surprised to see our involvement completely cease in Libya. It's a safe bet that the U.S. will be a key player in the NATO-allied efforts, regardless of how they spin it. Our strength and our military might will be used. All while we're under the public relations guise, they've notified the public that we're no longer going to be involved, and NATO will be taking over control of the no-fly zone. That's just public relations. Present administration is feeling public pressure to not partake. Economic issues at home need to be addressed. You know, having a global triumph won't fix our problems at home. As if we were to spearhead these efforts in Libya, we'd be looked at again as the global strength. But that's not going to help us at home. Officials know they need to show the American people they are doing all they can to fix our domestic problems. While Obama has received criticisms for not addressing such international issues as Libya, irregardless, you know, he's doing the right thing. He's putting on that show to make us believe that we're pulling out, putting on that show to make us believe he's focusing domestically, saying that NATO will take over. You know, and I'm for one, I'm glad he's playing the political field the way he's been going. Playing the cards of a president who has too many domestic issues at home for him to jump into the national spotlight. Handing off to NATO is just a spin, an illusion for citizens here at home who would rather see our government focusing on us and our domestic issues. Saying that NATO is now in charge allows us to believe that our men and women are packing it up, going back to a military base somewhere else, in a friendlier place, and even back to our great nation, the United States. So now the burden to uphold the UN resolution is spread among 28 nations. Despite that, we still are the strongest nation in that organization. The only way we would be completely free from upholding the UN resolution would be if pro-government, pro-Qaddafi, anti-rebel forces are at such a weak point that a member state such as Estonia, a member of NATO, has the military power to keep pro-government forces at bay and make sure the rebels have a victory. I mean, that would be the only logical assumption, but considering the limited information we have on Libya, it's safe to say we're still going to be playing an active role militarily along with NATO troops. But don't take my word for it. I mean, let's keep our eyes open to the news. Let's keep our eyes and ears on this story. And as always, give me some feedback. Hit me an email at zackteague@live.com. ZackTeague. And send feedback to the WAZU Facebook. Tell me what you think. Tell us all what you think. Get your voice on WAZU. And now let's hear some music. I'm kind of tired of talking. I've been talking for a while. Let's get into it. Let's got some cake. The song's called War Pigs.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction. Construction in the fields of bodies burning as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Stops turning as you hear the bodies burning. No more war pigs have the power, and as God has struck the hour.
Oh,
All right, that was pretty nice. Good way to end a war story. Back here in Illinois, March 30th is Environmental Lobby Day in Springfield. That's tomorrow. It's sad they only have one day a year to promote environmental interests, but what can you do? Nevertheless, many environmental groups from across the state will converge on Springfield to lobby for the passing of some important environmental bills. If you want to lobby for these bills, you can write a letter to your congressional members, make an appointment to speak with them, or you can phone their office to voice your support. Here are a few House bills and Senate bills that could use your support. Rooftop Renewable Energy Jobs, House Bill 1943, and House Bill 1913, and Senate Bill 1365. House Bill 1943 will help Illinois meet its renewable portfolio standard by requiring a percentage, 1%, of the renewable power produced in Illinois to come from smaller, distributed sources, like rooftops on small businesses or homes. House Bill 1913 will expand net metering by allowing equal credit for energy production given to community-owned solar projects, farms, and small businesses. It will also increase the number of customers allowed to participate in the program from 1% to 5%. Supporting these bills will create jobs in Illinois. Senate Bill 1365 contains a combination of the two House bills, 1943 and 1913. Please support House Bill 3055 and House Bill 1422. Also, Senate Bill 1884. These bills will expand efficiency and save ratepayers money. House Bill 3055 will remove budget caps on efficiency, measures that result in net benefits for ratepayers. House Bill 1422 will allow energy efficiency projects to be a product that can be purchased by the Illinois Power Agency. Senate Bill 1884 contains a combination of the two House bills. Please support House Bill 3623 and Senate Bill 1980, the Illinois Clean Water Fund. Currently, the money paid by polluters of Illinois waterways is being swept into a general revenue fund. These bills will stop this sweep and direct the money to the Illinois EPA to be used for clean water projects. The logic is, if they pollute the waters and they have a tax for their pollution, those tax revenues should go to cleaning up the waters and nowhere else. It's a great idea. Your support for these bills will help Illinois meet its obligations for a Clean Water Act and keep Illinois waters clean, drinkable, fishable, and swimmable. Please also express concern to your legislators regarding subsidies for new coal plants in Illinois. Please let them know that you are not in support of subsidies continuing for dirty energy. Illinois can make jobs in clean, renewable energy and in energy efficiency projects with efforts like the bills I've described. Be an active community member and fight for a reduction in our carbon footprint Wednesday, March 30th, tomorrow. Also, just a reminder, and I'll deliver a reminder about this event again, April 9th is the Illinois Sustainable Living and Wellness Expo, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington. So check that out. You can get more details about it at gwsolutionsgroup.com. That's the homepage of the Central Illinois Global Warming Solutions Group, which meets at the Lakeview Branch Library Public Meeting Room the first and last Thursday of every month at 6:30, and they welcome the public. They have all kinds of information on green energy, renewables, the Sustainable Living and Wellness Expo at Illinois Wesleyan University. Please check out globalwarmingsolutionsgroup.com, their homepage, check out them at the library. Well, right now, let's check out the Talking Heads just for a break.
You may find yourself living in a shotgun shack, and you may find yourself in another part of the world, and you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile, and you may find yourself in a beautiful house,
with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
Letting the days go by, let the water hold me down. Letting the days go by, water flowing underground into the blue again. After the money's gone, once in a lifetime, water flowing underground.
And you may ask yourself, how do I work this? And you may ask yourself, where is that large automobile? And you may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful house. And you may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful wife.
Letting the days go by, let the water hold me down. Letting the days go by, water flowing underground into the blue again. After the money's gone, once in a lifetime, water flowing underground.
Same as it ever was, same as it ever was, same as it ever was. Same as it ever was, 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 same as it ever was. Water dissolving and water removing. There is water at the bottom of the ocean. Under the water, carry the water. Water removing, water removing, water removing, water removing.
I'd like to deliver on my promise of introducing the listeners to a local business cooperative that is springing up right here in Peoria. I spoke with the man who is responsible for that spring, Gary Chatham. Spoke with him on Saturday or Sunday of the weekend, last weekend. Had an interview. There was a Bradley student who was present. She was interviewing him for a paper, potentially a paper that would be in the Bradley student newspaper. So, if you hear in this recording, you'll hear another person asking questions. That is a Bradley student. I can't remember her name. She's a nice girl, though, but I can't remember her name. It escapes me. Let's listen to that. Well, would you call yourself the president of the Peoria Harvest Co-op, or would you call yourself the principal?
I'm kind of the organizer. I will probably turn out to be the general manager if the board decides to hire me. So there is a board of directors that makes the final decision, so I'm not the only decision maker. I'm kind of the person that's spearheading the organizational process right now. I don't know what title that gives me for right now. But
how many members do you have currently for the co-op?
We're just getting started, so we just have a few members. we've only been accepting memberships for less than a week. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's just starting. We're organizing as a for-profit corporation, but we're running it as a nonprofit, which means we're not interested in trying to accumulate excess profits for investors and especially ship those profits off someplace out of town. That we're looking as a member-owned business to keep it basically as a nonprofit. So if we're meeting expenses, that's where we want to be. Any overage in profit will go back to our members.
How many members do you expect to have?
I would love to have a few thousand members in a couple years.
Okay.
We're modeling a lot of what we're doing after the Common Ground Co-op in Urbana. They have 3,500 members. They've got over 2,000 square foot of retail space plus back room, and they're doubling everything. So the idea is, can I give you general stuff before we get into the other questions? Okay. The general idea is to, with gas prices and food prices going up, and we don't see that stopping anytime soon, is to cut out all the middlemen and cut out a lot of the profit, excess profit, with the food supply. So we're looking at local farmers. We've already talked to 13, 14 local farmers who want to supply the co-op. Do healthy food, as much organic as we can. If it's not certified organic, then we provide information about how it's grown or how the animals are raised. We're planning on having, say there's a meat section with turkey, then we may get turkeys from Yorty's Turkey Farm in Morton. We'll have a picture of Brent Yorty, picture of the farmer, a couple bullet points about how his turkeys are raised and what he does. So you can know your food, you can know your farmer, you can know the sources of where it's coming from. And then we're supporting local farmers that are growing in green, sustainable, hopefully organic ways. And then we're a member-owned business, so it's a democratic process. All the members can participate in elections for the board of directors. They all participate in big decisions. The board then hires the management and the employees. So it's kind of a totally different model that way.
Well, I read the mission statement on your website, and it says you'd like to provide the community with access to nutritious organic food at reasonable prices year-round.
Right.
How will you meet that year-round demand?
We can't obviously get it from local farmers year-round, but there are sources that through some major distributors that we can get organic foods that are mainly from California in the wintertime, that we have to do that just for the winter. But we're talking to some local farmers who are doing some things with growing in greenhouses and even hydroponics organically. Yeah. So we're hoping that can really grow and expand. Until there's enough local farmers doing that, we'll have to bring it in.
Yeah,
because it still maintain the same organic standards.
It's not sustainable from such far distances, you know. I mean, and that's the goal.
Right.
And it's good that you have safeguards against that with the greenhousing and the...
Yeah, that's something that we can hopefully influence by providing demand for it. But it's up to the local farmers, and if people want to invest in that, I think that's a great thing. So as that grows, then we want to do all locally sourced whenever that's possible.
Now, the community center aspect of your project sounds great. How do you plan on implementing that? How would that work?
There's two parts to that. One is we're going to start with food, produce, fruits and vegetables, meats, expand out into dry groceries, frozen foods, and then supplements and skincare and the full range of products like a health food store. But then two ways we'd support the community is we'd have other businesses sell things on consignment. So if somebody wants a little business, like a section of our floor space to sell organic cotton clothing, other non-toxic products, non-toxic cleaners or something like that, then they can come in and sell on consignment. So we're a little business incubator in that way. But then also have a community center where maybe holistic health practitioners can have rooms to practice massage or something like that. They can rent by the day or by the hour. I know from my experience of being a holistic practitioner myself that to rent a small little room, half of the size of this room, we're looking at $400 to $500 a month, usually in Peoria. And for a lot of people just starting off, that's not feasible. So we want to make it an education center, so a nutritionist can come in and do a class on nutrition, the massage therapist can do a class on massage, and then we're promoting those other local health-oriented businesses by being the focal point, also by having a meeting space for nonprofits to meet. So if somebody wants to come in and just rent a room very reasonably for a meeting and not have excess noise, things to deal with, and have a source of good food while they're there, then we'd like
to
do that.
This network of better business networking through of green and holistic and local and natural businesses in the area, have you already built that network? Do you already have connections and partnerships with businesses that share the same like-mindedness as you?
We know people. One of my other projects is holisticpeoria.com. That's a separate business from the co-op. But through that, we have a lot of those connections already. We haven't set up a formal network as yet, but we would like the co-op to be that focal point, and maybe set up a barter network then, which would have to be a different business entity than the co-op, but connected through it, so that businesses can trade services. Of course, they still have to pay taxes on it, but they're not, if they want something, they don't have to come up with a lot of cash. So when I started a business in California a few years ago, we did our first jobs on barter as part of a barter group. And it was easy to get those first jobs because we didn't have any portfolio work to show. And then we could go, we took that and went to an attorney and had our formal corporate papers drawn up. So we paid the attorney in barter bucks, and he paid somebody else in barter bucks. So the whole thing is about keeping the money local and local jobs with local people and maintaining as much of the financial circle locally as we can.
Peoria has two farmer markets already. Is there a demand for what you're proposing?
There is a demand because we're looking at providing something like a health food store or even the health food section of a grocery store that's a year-round access to those type of products. So the farmers markets aren't year-round, but unlike the health food sections and grocery stores, we'd focus on local farmers at a fraction of the price.
That's right.
So if a member pays their membership fee per year, they can come in and buy everything at a discounted price as long as their membership is current. The public can come into our store whenever they want to and pay full retail price, which would be higher, but they're always welcome. So it's providing something like a health food store would, but local produce, and then keeping the prices at a fraction of what you pay someplace else.
Well, what would be the demand for present farmers market farms, who they sell their organics to at the two farmers markets we have? What would be their desire to team up with you instead of keeping what they have already? And do you see that as a conflict?
I don't see it as a conflict. It's an opportunity for them to grow. That's where all the farmers we talked to, except one, said they were wanting to expand. So they saw it as an opportunity to do more of what they love to do. And that's hopefully how we can support them in doing that.
Awesome.
Has there been any concern from the local CSAs? Or have you been working with them?
We've talked with some of them, but we see them as a different model.
Okay.
A different business model. So there may be some overlap where some people would choose to be in a CSA and not be a member of the co-op, but we're providing a wider range of products than just the CSA and from more than one supplier, as well as some of the other, you know, your general frozen food entrees and things that you could get at the health food section of the grocery store, or eventually healthy skincare and vitamins and those types of things. So it's a different model than the CSA, but that's a good question.
Your rates for memberships yearly are very affordable. I mean, I'm even considered signing up myself because I really like the idea. I'd like to take part. What could you say to anyone who might be on the edge or be on the fence of joining, who might be a little reluctant? What would you say to them?
If you're interested in getting healthy food and keeping your overall cost low, if you're spending a lot in the regular health food store or the health food section of the big grocery stores, you're going to see the savings accumulate over time, hopefully in a few months. It all depends on how much you buy and how much you're there. But even as a single person, or especially as a family, spending a lot in the grocery store, I think you'll see the savings work out to make it more than worth your while. One of the things that we want to do is have a program that has maybe up on a wall in the store is have some recipes for healthy food items, healthy entrees, that show that you can eat very affordably for $1 to $5 a serving with healthy food. So it's showing that you can do these things affordably and get healthy food, organically grown, not the high fat, not the high processed foods, and be able to do that in an affordable way. So we want that information out there to the public, and then that can really show you how your membership fee can be, you know, recouped with savings.
So how far along are you in this process of making this all a reality?
We've only been working on this a few months, so we're in the organizational stages. We're going to be having several events through the summer, hopefully opening like a little embryonic basic store by the end of the summer. So we'll be at Earth Day, we'll be at the Peoria Women's Club Vendors Day. There's going to be a big holistic health fair in July at the Universalist Unitarian Church, July 16th. We'll be there. So we'll be selling memberships and educating people about the co-op at all of those. So the speed that we can, you know, raise the money really determines how fast we can open the store. So we're looking to not only sell memberships, but have people give us loans. Members can give the co-op loans, and it's an investment, and we're offering a rate of, I believe it's 1 or 1.5% higher than most bank CDs right now. And then after a certain period of time, we'll give them a payment schedule that they're repaying the loan. So they're investing in the business that they're a part owner of, but helping us raise that money faster. So we are looking for that as well as the regular memberships.
Is there a location already planned out?
No, we haven't decided on location yet. We can't really do that until we have more money raised and can walk in and sign. But we're hoping,
is there an area of town where
hoping you're centrally located in Peoria, and then we are always a few steps ahead, but we're thinking of maybe a satellite office in the Bradley area for the Bradley students. Probably not our main store in that location, but something there that's easily accessible for the Bradley students, and then a main store in the central part of town somewhere.
Wow, this is really good points, really good things you're bringing up. I want to know, what are you doing to make it all happen? Like, I know you're in the infancy stages, but do you have any campaigns or pushes, or is it just word of mouth? How are you letting everyone know? I understand you run with circles of people who appreciate this sort of thing, and I'm sure you have a lot of friends and family and a network of your own, but how would you broaden it? What would you like to say that would broaden it? What do you plan to do?
We have a website up now where anyone can go sign up for a membership and they can learn more about the co-op. It's PeoriaHarvestCoop.com, so they can sign up through PayPal or send us a check, either way. But we're going to be doing a lot of events, so hopefully a few events each month where there'll be a booth and an opportunity for people to come up and learn about the co-op and then decide if they want to join or not, take information home or sign up right there. We're probably going to be doing a large event at Peoria Theater sometime in the next couple months. I don't have an exact date yet. I wish I did, but with some bands and maybe dance troupe, those types of things that would be there just to tell people about the co-op and sell memberships.
Keep me posted to those, because I'd like to air it on the air, let it be known that it's going down, and get the word out myself.
Great, thank you.
And yeah, let's stay in touch. And this is a good interview.
Definitely. Thank you.
Tell all your friends about the station and the show, Solidarity Journal, and I'll do the same for you.
Okay, I definitely will. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you.
Well, I really hope this takes off in Peoria. It could bring about a kind of change a community needs. But it could also fail. I mean, infighting in an organization can be the death of it, like any relationship. Please visit PeoriaHarvest.com, browse the information, and consider getting on the ground floor with an up-and-coming group that has the potential to revolutionize how you eat and keep yourself in good health here in the Peoria community. At WAZU, we hope to keep up with the growth of the Peoria Harvest Co-op, and we hope you will too. Stay tuned, more news is next.
Thought I'd sing a simple song. Not a tale of right or wrong. If it sounds familiar, then I hope you'll sing.
long. If you work in a factory, in the mud or on the street, punch a clock or tired feet, then you'll know what I mean. Falling ill, a schoolyard bully hooked on pills, with one hand on the Bible and a hand inside the till. Whatever will be, my friends will be. We're just a common man, and we don't ask much, but we know. By the unknowns, that's how the story goes.
In business topics, AT&T and T-Mobile merger, you know, bringing up questions about net neutrality. Net neutrality is the guiding principle that preserves the free and open internet. Net neutrality means that internet service providers may not discriminate between different kinds of content and applications online. It guarantees a level playing field for all websites and internet technologies. Net neutrality is the reason the internet has driven economic innovation, democratic participation, and free speech online. It protects the consumer's right to use any equipment, content, application, or service without interference from the network provider. With net neutrality, the network's only job is to move data, not to choose which data to privilege with higher quality service. But with giant mergers like the recent AT&T T-Mobile merger in question, it's any wonder how a competitive marketplace even exists. This merger could affect net neutrality. If this merger goes through, AT&T would be the largest, bigger than Verizon. Companies such as Verizon and bigger want to be internet gatekeepers, deciding which websites go faster or slow and which won't load at all. They also want to tax content providers to guarantee speedy delivery of their data, and they want to discriminate in favor of their own search engines and streaming video, while slowing down or blocking services offered by their competitors. These companies have a new vision of the internet. Instead of a level playing field, they want to reserve express lanes for their own content and services, or those of big corporations that can afford the steep tolls, and leave the rest of us on a winding dirt road as slow as the days of dial-up. The big phone and cable companies are spending hundreds of millions of dollars lobbying Congress and the Federal Communications Commission to gut net neutrality, putting the future of the internet, free speech, and freedom of the press at risk. The consequence of a world without net neutrality would be devastating. Innovation would be stifled, competition limited, and access to information restricted. Consumer choice and the free market would be sacrificed to the interests of a few corporations. The deal to combine AT&T, T-Mobile raises questions, forcing federal regulators to confront a difficult antitrust question. Can American consumers get good wireless service at a fair price if they must choose between just two national companies? AT&T, after the merger, and Verizon Wireless would be the only two nationwide providing companies. The deal would combine AT&T Incorporated, the nation's second largest wireless carrier, and T-Mobile USA, the fourth largest, which is now owned by Germany's Deutsche Telekom AG. And it could pave the way for Verizon to go after Sprint Nextel Corp, seeking a merger. Regulators will conduct a thorough market-by-market analysis to determine how many wireless choices consumers would have in communities around the country. And even if they allow the deal to go through, government officials would probably require the combined company to sell off assets, including wireless spectrum, cell towers, and customers, in particular markets that are too concentrated. A Senate Democrat on the antitrust subcommittee is calling for net neutrality conditions on AT&T's merger with T-Mobile. Senator Richard Blumenthal, a Democrat from Connecticut, said in a statement, "Regulatory approval should contain strict conditions to ensure that consumer concerns about cost, access, choice, and competition are adequately addressed. Such high wireless market concentration raises serious potential net neutrality concerns that should be addressed. The largest mobile network in the nation must not be allowed to limit access to content in a discriminatory manner." AT&T agreed to the FCC's wireline net neutrality conditions, but helped lead the fight against stringent wireless rules by pressing the mantra that wireless is different. Meanwhile, in January of this year, the bill proposed by Democrats Al Franken and Cantwell, entitled Internet Freedom, Broadband Promotion, and Consumer Protection Act of 2011, barely got off the ground. It was legislation that would ensure net neutrality and protect consumer freedom to content regardless of internet service provider, network, or corporate plans for profits. So, you have legislation being called to a vote that doesn't get passed, nothing gets done with it. It could potentially protect the internet for all the freedoms that it can give. It could potentially connect consumer to all the content that there is to offer, and it doesn't even leave the ground. Meanwhile, these businesses are able to run amok in the marketplace. They go unregulated, potentially monopolistic. We're looking at having a telecommunications oligopoly of like three major consumer choices for nationwide cell phone, telephone, internet, and cable providers. How is that free? That there's no competition in that, and they would act uncompetitive towards each other. In fact, they would favor growth and potential mergers between all of them until one day there's one provider. All hail to the mighty provider, right? The one monopoly, the Walmartization of telecommunications. Hopefully we have the right people in offices around our great country, in our states, who can keep checks and balances on our markets so we don't have concentrations of power like we're seeing in this potential merger. Hopefully we can remain having a freedom of choice, freedom of voice, freedom of speech, freedom of all sorts of expression. Hopefully these people who are motivated by profit, hopefully they won't take away those freedoms in the name of profits. Net neutrality is a serious thing. Keep your eyes open to it. Keep on the lookout. Send me your feedback. ZachTeague@live.com. Get on the Facebook group, Solidarity Journal on Facebook. Check out WAZU 90.7 Community Radio, a service of ICC. Check them out online. Find their website. I keep forgetting to get their website. Because one day, the only news you'll get is Fox News or CNN, something like that. You'll go online, you'll go to WAZU.com, and if net neutrality has lost, it won't load. It'll load for years. It'll take decades. It'll take 20 minutes. You'll finally pop it up. You'll realize we have no programming. We have nothing going on. But you'll go to Fox.com, and they've paid the express lane, right? They've paid the ISP service provider. They've paid the telecommunication company's price to have the fast lane to your home PC. So they're controlling information, controlling independence, controlling knowledge. Not good. Keep up on this story, listeners. Finally, in labor news, the state of Maine's governor is proposing to remove a historical mural which depicts labor movements and the efforts of workers throughout history in a public building of the state's Department of Labor. The removal of this 36-foot painting in the lobby is just one of many reforms the state administration have in mind for the Department of Labor, which include the renaming of several conference rooms which have titles of famed historic pro-labor icons, such as Cesar Chavez. Worker advocates described the move as a mean-spirited provocation amid the administration's high-tension standoff with unions. The administration felt the mural and the conference room's monikers showed one-sided decor, not in keeping with the department's pro-business goals, claiming the removal and renaming would show a more balanced identity of the department. The fact of the matter is, art is resistance and freedom. Silencing the artistic voice and expression will surely wither away a nation's culture, erode a forgotten history, and silence a motivating voice to future generations. This is also a flexing of authoritative muscle to threaten the working class, whom are demanding their rights and fair treatment. I have to wonder, what will be the straw that breaks the camel's back? How much will we take between wars, unrepresentative legislation, high taxation on the middle class and tax cuts for the rich, increasing college tuition, gas prices, failed promises from governments, homelessness, hunger, pollution? When will we rise and demand our government do our will and not the will of wealthy owners of resources? Turn the volume up, raise the voice, and stand. Thanks for listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU. Send me your feedback. Thanks to Gary Chatham and the Peoria Harvest Co-op, on the web at PeoriaHarvestCoop.com. Please tune in next week. You'll hear a story of addiction recovery. We'll examine nuclear energy policy in the U.S. and Japan, and much more. And as always, good music.
I wrote to you last night because I couldn't sleep. My conscience felt the paradox of law between the sheets. When I woke up this morning, I knew I had a song to sing. But I'm too scared to sing it now, there's no time for daydreams. I camped out on the floor of a university. I saw kids running so fast that they could barely see. Bars across my window for my own safety. I wonder, is this really where I wanna be? So long. Concert in the grass. I wanted to believe that freedom there could last. 16 eyes now watch me for the choice I'm bound to make. Their doubt threatens to draw me from the path I'm bound to take. So long, so long, I'll be moving, moving on. So long, so long, I'll be moving on. Do you remember when we were young and we could name the things we ran from? What are your shadows hiding? Anxiety's a nightmare, which hero is gonna come around?